It's only a kick. A jump. A block. It's only a serve. It's only a tackle. A run. It's only for the fans. After all, it's only pressure. You got this. Adidas.
This is the Analyzing Anfield podcast on the Blood Red Channel, bringing you the best tactical and statistical analysis of Liverpool FC.
Hello and welcome to this week's episode of Analyzing Anfield, your tactics and analytics podcast, courtesy of the Blood Red Channel. I'm Josh Williams and I'm joined by Mo Stewart. Mo, how are you feeling, mate, ahead of week two of the wildcards?
I'm feeling good. I'm also feeling a little bit strange. Obviously, for people who don't know, I'm in America. I've come to visit my family and I'm sitting in my mum's basement. At like 9 o'clock in the morning. So I'm excited to get to this because, as I said to you just now, I kind of did both lists at the same time. So I've kind of already been willing to talk about some of these guys. But yeah, let's get it.
Yeah, well, we appreciate the commitment that you're podcasting from across the Atlantic, really. So yeah, thanks for tuning in. Hopefully we can identify a player who is just as committed as you are, Mo.
There's
hopefully
some out there.
Yeah, but the plan this week anyway. Last week we suggested five midfielders each to solve the big problem in Liverpool's midfield department. And for those who didn't tune in, the topic of the show was you can't suggest Jude Bellingham, and you've basically got to suggest your top five of you is in charge. This week, we're sticking with roughly the same theme, but this week the theme is wild cards as well. So you can think a bit more outside the box, throw a few more curveballs, and that sort of thing, really. But still no Bellingham and still midfielders and that sort of thing. So without further ado, Mo, I'll let you start once again, mate.
Oh, well, this is going to be quite easy because I deliberated about whether to leave him out because we mentioned him last week in your list. But the number one of mine is Youssef Fofana. And I thought... The reason why I put it down in my wildcard list and not in my main list is because Monaco have only just lost Tchouaméni. So the deal itself, I feel, might be quite difficult to do. I mean, the current deal only runs till 2024, but the club do have an option. And I suspect that between now and the end of the summer, they will be looking to make him sign an extension. But in terms of qualities, I think he's fantastic. I mean, he's not got as much going forward as you get from Tchouaméni, but that's partly because Tchouaméni was doing all that when they were alongside each other. But as a destroyer, as someone who reads the game really well, he's got great energy and a potential to build and to develop into a really good player for many years to come. I think he's definitely one to watch.
Yeah, I think it's a good shout. Obviously, I mentioned him last week. Saw him come on for France last night as well. For Tchouaméni, funnily enough. But yeah, I think he's he's that athletic build in the centre of the park, quite well rounded. I think he's shined a little bit since Tchouaméni left Monaco. So yeah, I like that shot. And I think I also pointed out last week as well that he's on a reasonable, quite a low wage actually. Yes. I think he's got 2 years left on his deal. So I think even in terms of one in January, it's not completely out the question. I'm not sure what European competitions Monaco were in actually.
They are still in the Europa League, I believe. They were in the Europa League. I think they got through the qualifying. I think the thing that we, in terms of getting a deal done earlier, I think it might depend upon what we have in our stocks to maybe send the other way. Maybe, I don't know if we can persuade them to take Alex Oxlade-Chamberlain off our heads. But I do think in terms of numbers, that might be an issue. If we can maybe say, okay, as one of ours, yeah. They've got Leverkusen in the next round of the Europa League. And to be honest, Leverkusen are another team who are up and down. So they'll probably fancy their chances in that one. In terms of the league position, they're still in with a fight at the Champions League places. They're like, Lons are on 36, they're on 27. So it's a decent way off, but they'll believe that they've still got something to fight for this season. So it might take a good amount of money, a decent chunk, but yeah, not impossible. For sure.
Yeah, that's a good shout. I think if he ended up at Anfield, I'd have no real issues with it. I think he'd address some of the issues that we're touching on. So in terms of myself, just for a bit of clarity, I I'm going with last week's criteria in terms of a defensive-minded midfielder who is athletic, ideally physical and tall, always available and a good age and that sort of thing. That's what I'm leaning towards. So those who are a bit more creative, a bit more attack-minded, like, for example, I don't know, like a James Maddison or something, he is not making my list, not even close, because he's not the type of player that I think will solve Liverpool's void. But with this being Wildcards Week, I have included a few players who don't entirely fit the criteria and maybe fall short in a few boxes, but because it's Wildcards Week, I'm allowed to do that. So first up, I'm going to stay close to the Premier League. And I'm going to suggest a player who's newly arrived in the Premier League. Actually, this is probably a bit of an unreasonable suggestion, to be honest. But Tyler Adams of Leeds United. That's a good reaction from Mo there.
I mean, he nearly made my list. That was the reaction.
Yeah, I mean, he's not... I will say again as well, same as last week, this isn't like in any specific order. I'm just going to list me five. But yeah, Tyler Adams, I don't mind him at all. And I think he's relatively suited to exactly what Liverpool need at the minute. Whether he's attainable, I don't know, because he's just joined Leeds and he's got a contract until 2027. So another 5 years on that. So even if Leeds go down, he's probably going to cost a fair bit. But even so, I think just simply because of his suitability to the type of player that I'm after, I had to include him. So he's currently he's captain of the US, as far as I'm aware, which offers an insight into his leadership and all that sort of stuff. And I've watched interviews with him, and he's a really good talker, really charismatic, and confidence in the way he speaks and all that sort of stuff. Good communicator on the pitch and things. He's also a product of the Red Bull system, yes, which is always a good thing. Obviously, Liverpool have signed Minamino, Mane, Kanate, and Keita in the past from Red Bull. Or Red Bull passed, at least. Timo Werner was another player who was linked from a Red Bull club. So he fits that bill again. So he's kind of got that base behind him of working as part of a pressing unit. You know, I think he originally emerged at New York Red Bulls. I think he then moved over straight to Leipzig, I think it was, to join up with Jesse Marsh in Leipzig. And then since Jesse Marsh has gone to Leeds, he's took him there as well. So obviously Jesse Marsh is keen to take him wherever he goes. He's a very mobile kind of centre mid, very industrious, covers ground, very functional, you know, no stardust or anything like that, but he'll let the creative players play, essentially.
Yes.
Not a bad height, about 5'11", I think he is. And in terms of his numbers this season, they're really not bad for Leeds, considering, you know, their level. His progressive numbers on the ball are decent, and defensively, he's currently fourth in the Premier League for total tackles and interceptions, which obviously, it's not a great stat, and it's not even pay 90, because we haven't really played enough minutes for me to start doing that, but it at least captures his tendency to regain the ball and stop attacks, basically, and that's kind of the player that I'm looking for. So yeah, whether it's doable or not, I don't know, but just considering the fit, I thought he was ideal.
I think in terms of how doable the deal is, a lot of that might depend upon how long Jesse Marsh is at Leeds. Because as you say, he was very much his guy who brought him over. And sometimes you see that when a new manager comes in, they want to do things differently. But the suspicion is it might be difficult with him because, like you say, the type of player he is. He is someone that every team needs. Someone who has got energy but intelligence about the way they go about the defensive midfield job. Because like you say, it's not just about being able to get high rates of tackles and interceptions. I think he's only been booked once this season, which as a midfielder who does that kind of job is really good, because it shows that he's got intelligence about how he goes into these tackles. And he's a good age. And like you say, he's taken over the captaincy from Pulisic, which by all accounts has been a long time coming. I mean, Pulisic was very much the brand captain, I think it's probably fair to say, as in
he was the
poster boy captain,
yeah,
as opposed to the actual leader within the dressing room. And that's Tyler Adams. And yeah, someone who's that got that ability to take on such a big task at that young age, yeah, he's got something about him. He kind of reminds me of Genie without the backside.
Yeah, it's not a bad shout. It's not a bad shout. He's quite well rounded, isn't he? You know, he's comfortable on the ball. He can escape tricky situations. Don't get me wrong. There's nothing particularly special there, I don't think. But in terms of being a really functional Klopp kind of like mobile runner in the middle of the park, who will definitely give a boost to your engine room. Mm-hmm. I think he's suited to that. And I don't even think I actually mentioned his age. I think he's 20. Yeah, he's 23. So yeah. Again, it's a good age. So I think Leeds have picked up a good player there, and I think he'll do well for them. But if he fancies a move, I think out of all the top clubs in England, he's probably most suited to what Liverpool do.
I think so. Yeah. And I think Arsenal would probably find a way to utilise him, but in terms of a perfect fit, yeah. And in terms of there being space, yes. Because, I mean, obviously our midfield is going to take a lot of reshaping over the course of the next two windows. That's kind of why we're doing the show. So,
yeah, exactly. On to your second pick, Mo.
So my second pick is another guy who for a while was in my first five last week, but I just kind of moved him out because it is a slightly harder deal to make. Manu Kone, playing for Borussia Mönchengladbach. He's been earmarked for greatness for quite some time. And he is this season really starting to put his mark on things. Like, he's good at protecting the ball. He's another box-to-box midfielder who can play as a six, but it's probably not kind of using him to his best of his abilities. So the things I love about him, like I say, he's really good on the ball. He can take the ball from the centre backs. He gives himself time and space to make the right pass because he's good at shielding, good at strength, and he can drive forward with the ball. He's one of those players who you watch him and every now and then you just see him and you go, oh, wow. You don't get many, many impressive jobs. When you're playing more defensive, it's hard to be that impressive, but he manages it. And I think that he's got his strength in the tackle, good engine, good size. Again, he's got all the raw materials to be an outstanding foil for like your Thiago type or like your Barella type or even an Enzo Fernandez. So in terms of your criteria, Josh, I think you'd fit it perfectly. The issue potentially is around Gladbach's current situation. It's tricky for them because a lot of their best players are out of contract at the end of this year. So Kone is the only one who they can really expect to draw any significant fee from. So if we were to try and go, particularly in January, I think that it would cost more than it would do otherwise. But I still think that that's around 35, 40 million pounds. And for a kid who's 21 and has got, I mean, he's raw. Don't get me wrong. He will need some shaping. That's probably why he's on the wildcard list. He still needs some developing to do. But if you can get him working with Jurgen Klopp and Pep Blinders for a couple of years, I think he can be one of the best midfielders in the world.
Anfield on the Blood Red Channel.
With threats to our nation waiting around every corner, adaptability is more important than ever. When conditions change without notice, quick strategic thinking is crucial, and with obstacles consistently impending, determination is essential in overcoming them. It's this willingness, decisiveness, and resilience that sets Marines apart. With our fighting spirit, we don't just fight battles, we win them. Marines are the constant our nation counts on to fight the unknown. And through adaptable problem solving, we do just that. Learn more at marines.com.
Yeah, he I did consider him. He didn't make my list, but he was definitely an option. I think he does fit the bill of roughly what I'm after. I think it's interesting, actually, that if you look on FB Ref and just look at the similar players metric, second on that list is Moises Caicedo,
yeah,
who we obviously mentioned last week. And if you look at Kone's numbers as well, I've just been having a look, and he's in the 99th percentile of midfielders for dribbles, which I think is interesting. So obviously he's got that kind of like Naby Keita element about him, where he's willing to go on little mazy runs and things like that. So far this season in the Bundesliga, he's completed the same amount of dribbles as Jamal Musiala, who is currently playing for Bayern Munich, two more than Alphonso Davies, three more dribbles than Sadio Mane. He has played about 150 odd minutes more than those three players that I've just mentioned. But you know, it's an incessant save for the midfielders to have. And I think, again, going back to what Klopp tends to like and touching on the Wijnaldum thing as well, he does like those centre mids who can kind of, you can basically cope on their own if they have to. And I think Kone, he's got something about him. I think he's a good age as well. I think he's did you mention he was 21? Yeah.
21, yeah. And he's really this had two real seasons in the Bundesliga. So he's an experienced 21-year-old. He's not completely green. But yeah, I think when I say he's raw, he's got a certain over-exuberance, which sometimes lets him down. But that's something that if he was to come to the Premier League, he would have to adapt to. But I mean, yeah, in terms of, like you say, his progressive runs, and his passing is improving as well, because the reason he's got such high dribble numbers is because that's always his first instinct. But if you are playing for us, eventually you will start to develop the idea of knowing when to pass and how to pass. And I think that, like I say, he's something that who's adding so much to his game already at a young age that I think he'll be able to keep developing.
Yeah. Yeah, no, it's a good shout. So we'll move on then to my next one. I'm not sure where to go here with this. We'll go for... Yeah, so this lad is an interesting one, very interesting one, actually. Enzo Lafi. You aware of him, Mo?
No, I don't think I am.
Well, to be honest, 6 months ago, he was not on my radar. But he looks very, very, very interesting. In the numbers, he is what we call on this show a bit of an output merchant in terms of just posting all kinds of numbers, like he's doing loads on the pitch, basically. I haven't watched him that much because he plays for Lorient. And
this is the problem. Like, even within people who regularly watch Ligue 1, Lorient haven't been on TV a lot. So outside of the highlight packages, you don't really see much.
Yeah, I mean, even if they were on TV, I have other things to do. but he is a quality option by the looks of it. He looks really, really interesting. He looks like he's come out of nowhere to me. 22 years old, so he's still a kid. He's on a very low wage, less than $2,000 a week, apparently. And he's got 2 years left on his contract. So he plays for Lorient. So in terms of him being attainable, big tick next to that. One of the reasons he didn't make my list last week, and one of the reasons he is definitely a wild card, is because in terms of his height, he's about 5'7". In fact, he's 5'6.5", according to FBref. So he's obviously, he's that kind of, maybe like a Thiago build kind of player. So he's not going to add that level of physicality that I was touching on last week. And he's not necessarily defensive, but he just looks really good at everything, if you know what I mean. He's a keen dribbler in terms of, in comparison to other centre midfielders, good at escaping situations and stuff like that. He's creative, he's very technical, no injury record, apparently, and he's a product of the Lorient Youth Academy. So hasn't really had a transfer yet in his career either. Does look a bit lightweight, as I've said, but in terms of him being this, you know, really slight, technical dribbler type of centre mid, he's currently joint eighth in League One for tackles and interceptions. So,
oh, wow.
And in the numbers, he doesn't, you know, I wouldn't be suggesting of him if he was like a number 10 or a complete passenger or something. One of the reasons he's been included by me is he looks like I use Naby Keita as an example, and he looks kind of along those lines again in terms of midfielder who just does it all and can do a lot of things. And he looks really interesting because, as I said, he's just come out of nowhere for me.
Well, if he's someone who's making a higher level of tackles, interceptions, and he generally plays in attacking spaces, then that tends to suggest that he's good at pressing, and that most of those tackles and interceptions are happening in and around the final third. Which, if you have put that into a Liverpool team, that's normally going to translate into shots on goal. So that's exactly what we're after. In terms of age, he is young, but he's in his third full season in Ligue 1. He nearly played 100 games. So he's got that in him. I mean, he's an interesting project, for sure. I mean, I do think in terms of his size and stature, considering that we've already got Harvey, and I mean, and Curtis Jones isn't massive either. It might be one of those where he has to rotate with those rather than play alongside. But I mean, who knows? Who knows where his career is going to lead? And yeah, I do think that if we are trying to be FSG, Julian Ward, Pep Blinders, those kind of people, these are the kind of guys that are going to be on their list for the reasons that you've all mentioned.
Yeah, the way he's currently going at the minute, if he's still like this for the rest of the season, I'll be amazed if someone doesn't move for him in the summer. And I think of, you know, Liverpool's data department, for example, I'll be very surprised if he hasn't shown up to them. I was like, you know, I mean, they'll be aware of him anyway, of course, but it's, you know, it's Liverpool Football Club, but he looks very much like, who's that? And then you look into him a little bit deeper and, like he's played as part of a midfield two this season, mainly for Lorient, but he's also played on the left of a three in kind of like the Thiago role. Yes. And although I'd paint the likes of Curtis Jones and Harvey Elliott as offensive midfielders, I think Enzo Lafi looks like he's got kind of like an offensive skill set, but kind of like Barella and Thiago and like a Vitinha, they're not actually final third players. They will stay in the middle third, if you know what I mean. Whereas Harvey Elliott will go into the final third and Curtis Jones will go into the final third. Enzo Lafi looks more like in that Thiago mold where he will stay deeper, even though it looks like he should be playing close to goal, if you know what I mean. He's that kind of midfielder. So, yeah, if it's not Liverpool taking a punt on him, I wouldn't be surprised if it was someone like Brighton or someone like that. Someone who's, you know, a team that are interested in taking a risk, a team that are heavily reliant on the numbers and stuff. But he's definitely one to watch because he looks really insistent. He looks like he's come out of nowhere, really.
No, for sure. And again, it might be one of those where we're like, who's that guy? And then suddenly everyone's talking about him by the end of the season.
Yeah,
we're just ahead of the curve.
I mean, for a bit of perspective, just very quickly on the similar players metric again on FBref, the most similar player according to FBref is Mahmoud Dahoud, who Liverpool were linked with a few years ago actually when he was at Mönchengladbach. And second is Bruno Guimaraes, who was at Newcastle United, who I'm obviously a big fan of. So, and Youssef Fofana is also there, funnily enough. But yeah, he's worth monitoring. Although I don't necessarily think Liverpool will go for him, I think he will get a move somewhere.
Mm. Oh, for sure. I think he will. And it might even be that there's a move before and then suddenly he goes up to an elite level. So it might be a mid-ranking Premier League team in West Ham, or maybe even a Monaco who are looking to replace some other players who may have just left.
For Liverpool.
Yeah, exactly. It all works out rather nicely in the end. Yeah. Right, it's time for my next one, is it?
It is.
Right, so for this one, Ray, I kind of thought a little bit about what you were saying last week about how important it is to have that defensive stopper. Most of the midfielders I choose do have a little bit of everything. This guy is just a destroyer. Florentino Luis, playing for Benfica.
Okay.
He is a defense, as I say, he's a defensive minded midfielder, but he is a very intelligent tackler. Like, if you watch him, he's not just flying about into tackles here, there, and everywhere. He's sizing up his opponents. So, he the perfect time to dive in, nick the ball, and be away. And he's not someone who's going to paint pretty pictures with his passing around. He's basically going to win the ball and give it to the guy who can do it better than him. But if you look at his numbers for winning, like tackles won, dribblers tackles and interceptions, clearances, blocks, passes blocked, he's in the 97th or 98th percentile or higher in all of those. Like, he is the ultimate terms of defensive midfield job. He covers the ground really, really well as well. And again, in the last week's show, we talked about the idea of partnerships and players who are complementary. Obviously, if we were looking at Enzo Fernandez, then it might be an easy walk over to say, well, do you want to come along as well? And when you look at the way Benfica have played in the past, particularly when Bruno Lage was there, it was very much like a Liverpool-esque, as in the fullbacks bomb on, the wide players will come a little bit more central. And the defensive midfielder will be there with the centre-backs holding the fort. And that's basically what Florentino Luiz has done better than anyone. He's able to be a one-man one-man breach of all breaks, which is kind of what we need. The reason why he's on the wildcard list is that he's another one who signed an extension contract literally last week. So he's now contracted to 2027, which is a bit of an issue. But, I mean, within that, this is Benfica. So we don't know what kind of little nuggets that they might have put into that contract around release clauses, etc., etc. And it might be that we've obviously got quite a good relationship with them so far. So it might be that it's easier for us to get a deal done than other people. But yeah, I look at him, and like I say, some of the other midfielders we've talked about, they can be a bit of this and a bit of that. This guy's a pure six, and I think he'd be fantastic in the Premier League.
Yeah, again, I did consider him. But this is the ongoing issue in terms of contracts. Contracts really do determine whether you move on or not. That's the bottom line. And a lot of the players we've suggested, you know, I suggested Enzo Fernandez, his teammate last week. He's just moved to Benfica. I've just suggested Tyler Adams. He's just moved. So it's really hard to get the timing right when it comes to these players. That's why we're waiting for Bellingham. Because Bellingham then goes down to his last 2 years and stuff, so it's really difficult sometimes when it comes to these contracts, getting players out of clubs like Wilfred Zaha, for example, wondering why he's still at Palace. And Harry Kane, you know, yeah, you signed a new contract, mate. You've committed your future to the club. That's the way it works.
I mean, Harry Kane signed a 6-year contract. Like,
yeah.
I mean, there's having faith in the team around you, and then there's just being stupid. And I think signing a 6-year contract when you're Harry Kane was probably a little bit stupid.
I don't know. I think it's been one of them, hasn't it, where he's been enticed in by the numbers on the contract, I think. I mean, wouldn't we all, but I still think it's a case of, like, it's when it comes to the transfer market, it's really difficult to acquire these players who are tied down. And Luiz, although he has a good skill set, you know, 23 years old, 6 foot, defensively active, physical, athletic and stuff like that. Nice profile, definitely worth monitoring and stuff. And it's worth noting as well, he's still only 23, so, you know, if another 2 years go by and he's significantly improved or whatever, he could still potentially come to Liverpool or anything like that. But it's just difficult to acquire these players when they're committing the futures. Like Sangare did it at the end of the transfer window in the summer, you know, and then it just kind of rules out any potential move. I'm not sure half of these players are even aware of this.
No, and I mean, it does kind of make a mockery of all of the struggles that we made to find a midfielder over the summer, doesn't it? Because, I mean, all these guys were available. All of them.
Yeah. I mean, Matias Nunes is another one. You know, you touched on him last week. He's just moved to Wolves. So when it comes to doing that, you're only really getting out of that club unless if the club goes down or a team is willing to pay absolute top dollar for you. And you've got to be playing seriously well for that to happen. So the transfer market, mate, is a difficult maze to master.
I'm glad we're only doing this for fun and not actually acting.
Yeah, I know.
Analyzing Anfield on the Blood Red Channel.
Yeah, so I'll move on to my next pick then. So this is another one who I would say this is very much a curveball in my opinion. I'm not sure what you think, Mo, but Alexis McAllister. That's a good reaction there. So yeah, I mean, it feels weird suggesting this guy because I think a lot of people's initial reactions would be he's exactly what you said you wouldn't suggest in a way, because a lot of people probably would put him in the same bracket as James Maddison in terms of being like a creative number 10 almost. And he kind of is that, right? But he's developed so much over the past 18 months or so at Brighton. He's spent the whole season so far as part of a midfield two next to Caicedo. And in that two, you would naturally think, okay, McAllister's the creator, Caicedo is the destroyer. Not the case. If you look at the numbers behind the season so far, of which he shows up well in, he's currently fifth in the whole of the Premier League for tackles and interceptions, just behind Tyler Adams and marginally ahead of Caicedo, he averages more tackles and interceptions on a per 90 basis than Caicedo, who is deemed to be, you know, this ball winning master essentially. So McAllister has that element to his game, you know, make no mistake. And he reminds me again of Naby in that sense, in terms of being a really technical, very attack-minded centre mid who, under the radar, really has the defensive game on his side as well. On top of all that, he's just 23.
He is.
Takes set pieces, takes free kicks, you know, penalty, good penalty taker. He's not the tallest. He's about 5'9". I mean, it's not too bad, but it's not the physical player that I was after necessarily. And one of the reasons I was excited to say his name a few weeks ago, at least, is his contract was due to expire at the end of the season. Mm-hmm. But he's just signed a new deal, annoyingly. Not a particularly long one, which is why he's still a pick. He's just kind of extended it till 2025.
Okay.
So it's still a relatively short deal, really, considering he's just signed it. Maybe that's because he knows a club is interested in him. You know, mm-hmm. could be anything like that. He still remains on a relatively low wage, I think. On his previous contract, he was on about $30,000 a week. So I don't think he'd be on too much more than that now. Mm. Maybe 70, 80 or something like that. I'm not too sure. But as a package, you know, all-rounder type thing, he's very technical, attack-minded, you know, good at pressing and things. Remember, the pressing numbers were really good with him. I think he's played most of the minutes this season. But crucially, to the surprise of many, I would assume at least, he's defensively in the game. So he's one of my picks.
No, it's really interesting actually, because I think, like you say, the perception of him is more as an attacking guy, someone who's almost going to be in and around the 10 spaces. And with Brighton, the way that they interchange a lot, that was kind of the way we think about them. But that surprised me to hear that he's so high up in the tackles and interceptions. But it shows, like, again, he's got the skill set. And wherever he would play in a Liverpool team, if you could put him in a double pivot and he would thrive, then that's fantastic. If you play him further up and he's doing those tackles and interceptions, once again, they're going to lead to shots. The thing about his contract, which I think is interesting, is it a new deal or is it the club taking up the option of the extra year? Because if it's the club taking up the option of the extra year, for starters, his wages aren't going to go up. Second of all, they're doing it because they're worried that people are going to come in with a big deal for him. So they're going to try to protect his value, which means that they are amenable to a sale. Whereas if it's just a brand new deal that he signed for 1 year with better terms, then that might be different. But I do think that if we were serious about bringing him in, I think a deal could be done there for sure. I mean, obviously, again, if we're going for Caicedo and him, might be making it more difficult, but by the same token, if you're putting them together, like, they already know how to play together. And yeah, I can't feel like I keep repeating myself on that score, but having players who we already know are complementary is going to help for sure.
Yeah, yeah. I think if you look at his game, it's just really interesting. I think he would fit a specific mold, and it's not until you go a bit deeper that you kind of realize he's a lot more than that, really.
Mm-hmm.
And in the numbers as well, I need to stress that he does show as a valuable player in the numbers. And when I say valuable, I mean as in, like, within the context of winning a game, essentially. So what yes. he does for you in possession, and then what he does for you defensively as well. And if you combine the two, you've got a valuable player there. And I've just got up a piece that I read earlier in the season. It was a stats bomb piece on line-breaking passes, which is one of their new metrics. And at the time, McAllister was, for a bit of perspective, top of the league for line-breaking passes on a per 90 basis was Trent, followed by Cancelo. And I think, hang on a sec, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9. So Alexis McAllister was 9th in the league for line-breaking passes. And then further down in the same piece, in terms of receiving the ball in zone 14, so without getting too complex, zone 14 is basically, imagine a reasonably sized cube at the edge of the box where the D is almost, and you know that a number 10 space basically.
Yeah.
So picture the number 10 space in terms of receiving the ball in the number 10 space in 5 yards or more of space. He was third in the whole of Europe, behind only Pedri and Leroy Sané, and just ahead of Joshua Kimmich. So, again, in terms of numbers, very, very valuable player. And, you know, he's playing for a smart club. I'm sure he won't be cheaper and like that. But I think he's a real wild... He's a definition of a wild card for me. He's a proper curveball player who I wouldn't be that shocked if we were to go and buy, but a few people probably would.
Now, it's interesting. Like, the finding himself in space thing is really interesting because particularly when he's being compared to someone like Leroy Sané, who plays a wide player, who in theory is going to be a lot easier to find space out wide. If he's able to find consistently that much space in the centre of the park and still be as productive with it, that's a player to look out for sure.
Yeah, yeah. He looks very, very interesting. As I said, he does both sides of the game really well, but... who's your next pick, Mo?
Okay, so we're now getting into the wild of the wild cards. Now, I say that because I feel like most the two players who I'm got to pick to come for, people's perceptions of them are probably bad based on previous stuff. But I've been watching them both for a long time, and I think that they're Liverpool quality players. The first one, probably a little bit easier to convince people of. André Frank Zambo Anguissa, who I've loved since he was playing in Marseille. I've loved him since he was in Marseille. And at that point, he was playing in the midfield too, alongside Luis Gustavo. And his job was basically guard the spaces, win the ball back, give it to Dimitri Payet or Morgan Sanson. Since then, I mean, obviously, everyone remembers that Fulham were bad. But what people don't remember is that he was Fulham's best player by some comfortable distance in that season. And his ability, again, I like players who have got strength, he's got intelligence on the ball, he can shield the ball, but he's another dribbler. He's someone who can now add attacking prowess to his game. At Napoli, he's getting goals and he's getting assists. If you look at him on FBref, it's just green everywhere you look. He's in the top of most of the best kind of metrics. So if you're looking at assists, he's in the 96th. Took a pass completion, he's up there in the 90s. But then you've also got the fact that he's up there for dribbling as well. Non-penalty XG, he's in the 80s. Like, there are very few parts of his game where he's weak. And that's the thing that I look for. And again, if you look at the comparison, the number two player on the comparison is Jude Bellingham. So... he is a little bit older than most players we go for. He turned 27 last week. So he's a bit older, but he's still got some years ahead of him. Again, he also signed a contract recently. However, this is the interesting thing about his contract. Technically, the contract is still 2025, but there's an option for Napoli to extend it for an extra 2 years. So
okay,
if Napoli aren't happy or get a good offer before 2025, then they might deal. Otherwise, he's there potentially for the rest of his years. But I look at him, genuinely, I think that any club who fails in the Bellingham sweepstakes needs to take a swing at this guy because he's got it all in his locker. He really does.
Yeah, I have liked this player for a while. I remember when he signed for Fulham, and Fulham were a mess. But he, inside that, was definitely a positive contributor. Really good against the ball, wins the ball a lot, and he won the ball a lot before he signed for Fulham, which I think is why Fulham signed him. Yes. Top ball winner when he was at Marseille. I think it was Marseille.
Yeah,
yeah it was, yeah. So he's good on the dribble, surprisingly good on the dribble. Athletic, physical in the middle of the park, so... I'm pretty sure long-term listeners of the show will have heard his name, definitely, because I've mentioned him a few times in certain conversations. I'm not specifically sure why, but on the back of Fulham's relegation, when he got loaned, I was really surprised. And then he got loaned again, and I was just like, this player's really good. Why is no one going and getting him? But yeah, he's a good option, and I've thought he's suited to a Liverpool midfield role since back then, really. The only issue is now, as you say, he's just turned 27, just signed a new contract. I think the road to Liverpool has probably come to a close for him, to be honest. But I agree that the whole time, you know, he's been a suitable player for the void. We just haven't bought him for some reason.
Yeah, it's a strange one, really. Like, I don't know whether there's more to it. Obviously, we know in terms of Liverpool's recruiting, they take a wide range of factors into it. So, I mean, I'm not going to kind of start casting aspersions over him, but there might be things about him that we don't know why the people haven't gone for him. But from a purely footballing perspective, you're right. It just feels like a no-brainer. It feels like he's been sitting there this whole time. Because it wasn't even a lot that Napoli... I mean, I believe Napoli's option to buy on him when they took him on loan from Fulham was only 15 million, which is peanuts when you consider a player who at that point was 25 years old. And so it's almost like the issue now, and again, an issue in terms of getting him in January, is the position of Napoli and the play of Napoli. And it might be that, like you say, it's too late because he wants to stay there and win the Serie A for something they've not done in 30 years. And we've got a better chance than they've ever had. So it'll be interesting to see if after that, because I think they are going to win the league, to be honest, if the season after that, anything changes. But yeah, it's. I fear you might be right. I fear we might have missed the boat on him. But genuinely, like I say, if there are other clubs who are interested in Jude Bellingham, in the world that we get him, like he's probably the best player you can get who's not Jude Bellingham.
Yeah, so in terms of my next pick, he just about made it. Just about made it. but I have gone a little bit reluctantly with Youri Tielemans. So I suggested him a while back, actually, as a player of Liverpool, simply because I think it just made loads of sense. I've drifted away from that idea a little bit, looking at Liverpool's problems, because I don't think he's a completely suitable fit to what Liverpool are suffering from. But he's still enough of a fit for me to be definitely considered as an option. One of the obvious perks when it comes to Tielemans is he's available for free. His contract expires at the end of the season. Now, God knows why no one bought him in the summer just gone. That would, for me, raise a red flag. I don't know what. I mean, he's a Belgian international, you know, proven player and all that sort of stuff. So I don't know why someone wouldn't go for him. But from what I've seen, he weren't even a bid. So, you know, God knows why that was. Maybe he just wants to get paid, which is not a good sign. But he's never injured, you know, never misses a game. He offers a lot of control on the ball, very technical player. Doesn't have very many weaknesses. He's quite adaptable. Reminds me a lot of Wijnaldum, actually. Been playing at a really high level since the age of 16 as well. I think he played over 2,000 minutes in the Belgian top flight as a 16-year-old, and he's basically just done that ever since. So he's got a lot of miles on the clock, a lot of evidence behind him if you want to prove that he's a good player and that you can assess and analyse and all that. He's 25 now, so, you know, you could argue he's kind of like bang on peak age. He's not on a particularly big wage at Leicester at the minute. I think he's on less than 100k. And obviously he's proven in the Premier League, represents his country on a regular basis. And his numbers are pretty good as well. You know, he's a progressive player. We obviously know that. This season, he's having a goal of their season tournament with himself. And crucially, the big one obviously is the defensive side of the game. Can he defend? And apparently he can. Not to a massively high level or anything like that. It's nothing daft. But when I have kind of crunched the numbers, it's not bad at all. You know, he's not a passenger in any way, shape or form, really. In fact, no, never mind the fact.
Let's not go overboard. The thing about Tielemans in terms of that bit specifically, he works well alongside a natural six. Like, I wouldn't be playing him as a six.
No chance.
Not someone who's going to be front foot, looking to make tackles, looking to come out of the line and disturb. If you've got him alongside someone to get a short pass and then make damage, or even to just have the intelligence to cover over if the six is overexposed and just kind of cut out some passing lanes, he's got the intelligence to do that. I think part of the issue around Tielemans is energy, and particularly late in the game, he has a tendency to kind of stroll a bit. And
yeah,
I think people have seen that. They look at the way Liverpool's midfielders tend to be worked like dogs and just think that he's not going to be able to put up to it. I don't know. I still think that, he's, like I say, he's 25 years old. He's someone who clearly has the ability to be an elite level footballer. And that part of his game, the energy and that kind of stuff, that's the bit that you can work on. Like, anyone in theory can get more stamina as a human. Like, I can do it. So yeah, he can do that. So if that's his only real biggest weakness and it's something that's fixable, and like you say, he's available for nothing, then yeah, it's probably someone we should be looking at.
Yeah, I just think if we end up dedicating an absolutely ridiculous fee to Bellingham, it would probably be a way of getting around that, to get another body in by making the next lad, you know, a free transfer, if you like. Yeah. I don't really like the term free transfer, by the way, because it's obviously not free, is it? But you know what we're saying in terms of a transfer fee and stuff. But what I was going to say before was, in terms of his interceptions and tackles and things, he's averaging about the same amount on a per 90 basis as like a Frankie de Jong or a Rodri or Eduardo Camavinga. Now, obviously, there's stylistic things in that, different teams and different leagues and stuff. So, but that's just to offer an insight and say he's not a complete luxury or anything like that. He will get involved. In terms of his energy and things, I agree with you. I've never really watched him and thought, you know, he's an absolute dog who can run for like five plays or anything like that. He's not a Henderson. He's not a Milner.
No.
But you could argue he's a lot shrewder on the ball than them. And as a result of that, maybe he has to do a bit less of that because his intelligence is already quite good and his smartness on the ball and things like that. But yeah, as I said, he just about made it. I think he's not what I'm after. But as a free who will add a body almost to Liverpool's squad, because Liverpool could easily lose three centre mids in the summer, I think he's worth including.
I do. I agree. And I think that he will be under consideration for all of those reasons you mentioned. Definitely. Now, as I said, my last two are quite wild swings, and I'm preparing for people to be like, huh? But my fifth pick is Philip Billing of Bournemouth.
Okay.
Yes. And the reason, he's someone else who I've been impressed with for a long time. I thought he was probably Huddersfield's outstanding performer when he was in the Premier League. Surprised that no one took a punt on him again when he came back. And at that point, he was very much your all-action style midfielder, get around the pitch, break the play up, deliver it simple. But he's added attacking prowess to his game. I mean, he's playing on the wing for Bournemouth this season. And obviously his goals contribution has skyrocketed because of it. But he's still doing all of his defensively minded stuff. He's still getting in more tackles, more blocks, more clearances. He's a fantastic physical specimen, deadly in the air at both boxes. He's got a contract that runs out in 2024. He's very good in terms of his durability. I think he's only had one big injury so far in his career, and that was a good three or four years ago. So it looks like he's recovered from it. He is 26, so he's a bit older, but in terms of finances, in terms of adding someone of quality that we don't have in the squad for cheap, I think he ticks a lot of boxes.
Analyzing Anfield on the Blood Red Channel.
Yeah, for me, he is the definition of a wild card pick, actually. As I said, similar to you, I've been aware of him for a few years now. Picked up on him first of all when he was at Huddersfield, and I liked him then. But then he was a bit more of a defensive minded presence. Really tall, I think he's like 6'4".
Yeah.
Big long strides and very aggressive and stuff like that. But then checked up on him last season when he was at Bournemouth, and I think the game that I checked, I think he played as a centre forward. And I've just checked his numbers. He scored 10 goals and registered 10 assists in the championship. Honestly, last season. So very versatile, complete player in many ways.
I think he is. And the way that he's kind of dovetailed with Solanke, particularly last season, and it's really kind of shown an intelligence to his game. Because this is the thing, right? It's not just about someone, a manager thinking that he can play up front and pushing him up there. You've got to be able to do it. You've got to have the technical ability to do it. And I mean, if you look at some of the goals and assists he's done this season in the Premier League, the skill, the touch, the ability, I don't think he's something you can just dismiss just because he's only played for poor teams. I mean, he's obviously in the World Cup squad for Denmark, isn't he? I believe he is.
I think so. I don't think he started. I know he didn't start because I watched the game, but I'm not sure if he's in the squad or not.
But, I mean, if he's not, he bloody well should be. But I think, again, as a cheaper option, and the difference between him and someone like Maxence Kakaré, who I almost went for, I think it's something within our squad that's not covered at the moment. I do think the fact that we have pretty much committed to Harvey and Curtis does specifically rule out a lot of similar players to coming in, because
we're
going to have maybe one more to rotate in terms of who have similar skill sets, but you're going to be looking for everything else across the other midfielders. And I'm telling you, this, like I say, because this guy can play six, he can play eight, he can play 10, he can play nine, he can play out wide. I mean, I'm not going to say he could be the new Milner, but I'm not going to not say it either.
Just leave that one open for interpretation. No, I think it's a good shout. As you said, he's one thing I always pick up on him, he is massive on the pitch. He stands out an absolute mile. He's left foot as well, which is nice. You know, you don't get too many of them. Good in the air and stuff. So, and I think he's contracted for another 2 years. So, yeah, it's a decent shout. It's a proper wildcard shout. In terms of me, my final pick, I have broke the rules.
Oh, right.
So I haven't actually picked a player. I've got three names that I just couldn't really define, and I'm going to just gloss over. I'm going to just gloss over all three very quickly. Because if I'm honest, all three, I have pretty big doubts about, and I don't know. See what you think. So first of all, I've got Konrad Laimer. For obvious reasons, you know, he's 25. I was on the show with Dan Kennett last week, and he touched on him, all his positives and stuff. He's very much a runner, pressing monster, likes to cover ground, as industrious as it gets, and can do the running of a few players. And I think Dan summed him up pretty well by saying he's Jordan Henderson 4 years ago, or James Milner 8 years ago. Those are good comparisons for me. He does get injured a lot, though, which is what I don't like. And he's injured again, I think, at the minute. So that's a huge worry, considering the problems we've suffered from over the past few years, specifically in midfield. And I, for one, I'm sick of it.
I'm sick of it. Just said it's Jordan Henderson 4 years ago. Are you sure it's not Jordan Henderson 3 years ago?
Yeah. But he's the right profile, definitely. And he's available on a free, by the way, as well. Mm. But it's the injury stuff. I don't know too much about injuries, but he's just not, past two seasons, it's not great. So I would be very reluctant to go there for that reason. Second is Edson Álvarez for Ajax. So same age, 25, but still playing in the Eredivisie, which is not a great sign. Contracted until 2025, so he's got another 3 years on his deal. Can play as a centre-half and has played as a centre-half a little bit. And he's similar to Florentino Luiz, what you said, in terms of he is just kind of that destroyer six and doesn't really offer that much value elsewhere other than that. Will just break up plays, and he kind of reminds me of like a Lucas Torreira, or I think he's a bit taller than that. Like, I think he's about 6 foot, but he's that kind of player who will focus primarily on winning the ball for you, but when it comes to doing things on the ball, that'll be not unspectacular, it'll be pretty basic. And as I said, it's kind of difficult to assess just how good he is, considering he's still playing in that league. I mean, you can look at his Champions League performances, I suppose, but he's a player who roughly fitted the bill but not really enough for me to actually say Liverpool should buy him. And the last name is Ruben Neves. I think out of the three, I'd have him top out of those three. He's 25. I do think he's shown himself over the years to be Wolves' best player. He's got 2 years left on his contract, which is good. Obviously, he's got a relationship in the past with Pep Linders. Pep Linders knows him well. I think he's either captain or vice-captain, potentially. If he's not, he's got that about him anyway. He's that kind of, like, he's very much a leader, I think. And this season, he scored a few really vital goals for them, almost like Gerrard kind of goals, where they've needed him to step up and he's scored from outside the box or whatever. Really comfortable on the ball. Elaborate passing range. Can play as a double six. Whether he can play as a lone six, potentially, but I'm not sure. And I can see him in that Thiago role on the left of a three. Proven in the Premier League. And yeah, he's just a player that, and defensively as well, his defensive numbers are okay. You know, there's nothing particularly wrong with them. So he's a player who, he probably should be on my list, to be honest, probably above those two that I've just mentioned, but I just bottled it, including them in the end. But I don't mind Neves, though. I really don't mind him. If Liverpool ended up getting him alongside someone else,
yes,
I'd be all right with it, I think, but
you can see a world where it works. I think, yeah, I think in terms of, again, in terms of his skill set, he's got everything we want from a midfielder. He can be a progressive passer, but he's also can do all of the defensive work. He's got the ability. He's one of those only scores bangers guy players.
Yeah.
And it's like,
he only reminds me of, he reminds me of this. This is a shout out this to the absolute Premier League fanatics who watched it when it was like Premiership and stuff, but he reminds me of Two Guy.
I knew you were going to say Two Guy, because yeah, I was the same thing. Because I've he is very much the Portuguese Two Guy. In fact, I think I tweeted that a few years ago, the last time he made a banger. But the thing about that Two Guy is that we all remember him for his bangers, but Blackburn remember him as being a very good midfield player who probably came to them a few years too late in his career, otherwise would have been a Premier League great. So I do think that perception, and again, it's almost like, well, why have we waited so long if he's there? Because let's face it, Liverpool were linked with Ruben Neves when Wolves first came into the Premier League.
Yeah.
And it just kind of died away for a lot of reasons. Of those three you mentioned, I'd probably go for him as well. The thing with Edson Álvarez, Chelsea bid 50 million for him in the summer, but Ajax didn't want to lose him and Ryan Gravenberch in the same window. So the deal kind of fell through. So I wouldn't be surprised if someone does make a move for him over the course of the January window and see what happens there. But yeah, I think the fact that Neves has played in the Premier League so long, it does give him a bit of an advantage. The fact that a deal could potentially be done slightly easier, slightly cheaper than 50 million, then yeah, I think that might make him top of that mini list of what you mentioned.
Yeah, one thing I should throw in there that I definitely don't like about Neves is he's definitely not a runner. I don't think he's particularly quick at all. And yeah, he's just not that kind of player. You know, and you could argue, similar to Thiago, maybe, that he's got enough upstairs and his usage of the ball, his position, his intelligence kind of gets him through that. But industrious definitely isn't a word I'd use to describe him. Neither would I use the word athletic or anything like that. I mean, he's reasonably physical, but he's not. He's not going to have a physically imposing status in the middle of the field.
But he is a snide, though. Like, he is an absolute snide. And I don't know where you stand on this, but I do feel like every team needs at least a couple of those. And
we've
got Robbo, who does the job very, very well. But I mean, he probably needs
Nunes as well now.
Well, yeah, exactly. Yeah, he's a different kind of style. He's just like, you know, I'm just gonna run into you, and whatever happens, happens. So it's like Neves is the kind of guy where if you're a goal up in the last 10 minutes of a Champions League game, he can quite easily waste six of those last 10 minutes on his own, and you never know when that's gonna come in handy.
Yeah. No, I think he's a decent controlling presence, and obviously we've touched on the fact Thiago's 31 soon, and Liverpool don't really have many of those tempo setters in the middle of the field. So yeah, I don't mind Neves as a shout. He can probably go with my fifth, really. But yeah, we'll round up there anyway. Bit of a longer episode than usual, but that was our wildcard option. So, Mo, thanks for joining us, mate.
No worries, no worries. I hope that people at the club have been paying attention and that we'll see a couple of these turn up in red over the next two windows.
Yeah, well, to be honest, we've covered so many bases that somehow the club have got a task if they're going to find someone who we haven't actually suggested. So I've got a good option here to be able to say, look, we were right in this case, which is always nice, but oh, yeah. I'm sure Liverpool will find a way around it. So yeah, thanks for joining us, mate, from abroad, and enjoy your break. And yeah, we haven't got a plan for next week's episode, so do send in any requests, any suggestions. Maybe we'll do something on the World Cup or whatever, but thanks for tuning in, and we will see you next week.
You've been listening to the Analyzing Anfield podcast on the Blood Red Channel.